everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Working with Children Who are Experiencing or Engaging in Bullying Behaviour, co-produced by CFCA and Emerging Minds. We've received a wonderful response to this webinar, so it's great to have you all with us today. My name is Nicole Rollbush, and I work with Emerging Minds National Workforce Centre for Child Mental Health. I'm pleased to be here to facilitate this webinar today. In today's presentation, we'll aim to increase your understanding of childhood bullying and its impacts on child mental health. You'll also be introduced to ways in which you can begin to explore bullying involvement with the children and families you're working with. Just to note, we will be sharing children's stories of bullying, so if you find any part of this webinar distressing, please take care of yourself by practicing appropriate self-care and reaching out to your support networks. Before we go any further, I'd like to acknowledge the lands that we're all meeting on today. I'm on Kaurna land here in Adelaide, and I'd like to extend that acknowledgement to the different lands that you're all coming to us from today. I acknowledge the traditional owners' deep connection to the land, waterways, kin, community and culture, and the importance of these to the well-being of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And pay my respects to the elders, past, present, and those who are emerging. So as I mentioned, today's presentation will be about increasing understanding of childhood bullying and mental health, as well as looking at ways of working with children who've experienced or engaged in bullying behaviour. To expand on that, let's have a look at the learning outcomes so we can be clear for you about what's ahead in the next hour. So this webinar is aimed at supporting you to understand how childhood bullying affects child mental health, understand the importance of prevention and early intervention in limiting the effects of childhood bullying in adulthood, be curious about children's understanding and perspectives on bullying and why this is important, and exploring strategies to work with children experiencing bullying or engaging in bullying behaviour. So this webinar is part of a series of webinars that's focused on infant and child mental health that will be facilitated in partnership between CFCA and Emerging Minds in 2022. So we've got some upcoming webinars, which include supporting infant and toddler mental health and wellbeing, engaging children, and engaging fathers to support children's mental health and wellbeing. A couple of our recent webinars include supporting children who've disclosed trauma and approaches to support child mental health in culturally and linguistically diverse communities. So if you did miss those ones, they are available to access via the Emerging Minds and the ACE websites. This webinar is also part of a suite of resources on childhood bullying, and these are just some of the resources that have been released in recent weeks and some that are being released soon. So these are all available on the Emerging Minds website. Got some practice papers, a new e-learning, and a two-part podcast upcoming as well. And they can also be found in the related resources document that you can access in your handout section for this webinar today. It is now my pleasure to introduce today's presenters. Dr. Leslie Ann I, who is a senior lecturer and researcher at the University of South Australia. And we have Julie Clifton, who is a social inclusion worker at Hallett Cove R12 School and also works with the Bully Zero Australia Foundation, and Vanya, who's our child and family partner. So to introduce each of you to our audience, I wanted to ask you a question about why it was important for you to be part of this webinar today. So, Leslie, I'll start with you. Why was it important for you to be here today?
Thank you, Nicole, for inviting me and having me. I think as a researcher, it's important to be able to share my knowledge and help to educate professionals to understand what bullying is, so that they can respond in an educative and supportive manner.
Great. Thanks, Leslie. And Julie, why was it important for you to be part of this today? Oh, I think we've just lost your microphone, Julie.
Okay, sorry. I guess from a front line perspective, I've noticed a definite gap in knowledge and experience with teachers and practitioners around how to deal with bullying when young people come into their world. And so I just hope today the research and experience of the panel will help the viewers moving forward in that space. Thank you.
Great, thanks Julie. And Vanya, why was it important for you to be here today?
As a mum and also a child and family partner with Emerging Minds, it's just a wonderful opportunity to provide some education, some information on how to help children you're working with if they are enacting bullying behaviours or are affected by them. So thank you all for attending today.
Great, thanks Vanya. So please join me in giving our presenters a very warm virtual welcome. So I'll now hand it over to Dr. Leslie Ai, who's our first presenter. Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Nicole. So we know that bullying is a significant social problem impacting children and adolescents globally. It has significant impacts on children's physical health, mental health, and general wellbeing. And the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization found that approximately 246 million children and adolescents are experiencing school violence in some form every year. And the bullying is the most common form. So it is quite a significant problem. The AMF report estimates that the costs associated with bullying total approximately $2.3 billion while children are in school and for the 20 years after they've left school. This is because of the long-term impacts that bullying can have. So bullying is a subset of aggression, but must have the three elements of intention to harm, power difference, and repetition to be classified bullying. So bullying is defined as repeated acts of physical, relational, or verbal violence with the intent to harm or humiliate another person. It involves a certain level of power imbalance. The child experiencing the behaviour perceives that the other child has more power than themselves. Now, this could be due to race or physical size, sexuality, or sheer numbers. It could be one, four children against one child. Bullying can be overt or covert, and there's generally five different types of bullying. So these are physical violence, relational violence, verbal violence, sexual violence, or cyberbullying. Single incidents and conflicts or fights between equals, whether in person or online, are not defined as bullying. However, these conflicts still need to be addressed and resolved. Cyberbullying is bullying behaviour that is carried out through the internet or mobile phone technologies, and it's often combined with offline bullying. So children who are experiencing online bullying are commonly also experiencing bullying in real life, in face-to-face situations. It may include a combination of behaviours such as insulting online messages, publishing someone's private information, creating hate sites, or implementing social exclusion campaigns. So cyberbullying can be quite nasty. Cyberbullying can include relational, verbal, or sexual bullying. And the severity of cyberbullying is related to the nature of the online environment, in that one attack or one shared image or one hate site can go viral, which highlights the potential of repetition, which can have long-term effects on those involved, including bystanders. Research in 2019 with Gen Z participants, so these are children and young people aged between 10 and 24, found that around about 80% of participants reported that bullying was a problem in their school. 3 in 5 children and young people experienced bullying and were impacted by it. And 1 in 5 had engaged in bullying behaviour. Of those that experience bullying, 1 in 5 experience bullying on a weekly basis, and 1 in 12 experienced it daily. The most common forms of bullying were verbal, followed by cyberbullying, and then physical bullying. 14%, or around about 350,000 students who were bullied, do not seek help or talk to anyone. So this can be quite a big problem. Those who did talk generally sought support from their parents or from their peers. So I'm going to have a look at the impact of bullying now. So for the child engaging in bullying behaviour, they're more likely to develop externalising disorders. So this can be ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder. And they're also more likely to have lower self-belief, lower emotional competence, and lower credibility and trust from others. They're more likely to self-harm and have suicidal thoughts, and these children are more likely to engage in criminal offending and substance abuse, have poor educational and employment outcomes, and are at high risk of depression later in life. For children experiencing bullying, they're more likely to develop internalizing disorders, such as separation anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, and phobias. And they generally have an overall poor life satisfaction. They're vulnerable to hyperactivity, inattention, and emotional symptoms, including low self-esteem, lower levels of belief in self, lower levels of belief in others, poor emotional competence, increased stress, and subjective well-being. They're more vulnerable to social isolation, suicidal thoughts and attempts, and deterioration of physical health. So the impact of bullying for those experiencing bullying can be not only psychologically impactful, but also physically impactful as well. They're also more vulnerable to poor academic achievement, leading to financial, emotional, and psychological harm in the future. For children who both engage in and experience bullying, which is around about 20% of the children involved in bullying, these children are at the greatest risk and they generally develop externalizing and internalizing disorders. Some of the mental health impacts include anxiety, depression, eating disorders, separation anxiety, and deliberate self-harm behaviors such as cutting. They're vulnerable to conduct disorders, and conduct disorders are most severe for children and young people who both engage in and experience bullying. These children are more susceptible to lower self-esteem and higher failure anticipation, alongside all of the other impacts that I've discussed in the previous two slides. Professionals working with children need a clear understanding about bullying and bullying roles. Teachers have some understanding of bullying, but not comprehensive. So in their definitions of bullying, a minority of teachers mentioned all three of the defining characteristics of bullying. Parents also had limited understanding of bullying, and they tend to confuse bullying and fighting. And children had limited understanding of bullying. And in particular, they were over-labelling aggressive behaviours as bullying. But this was research done with teachers, parents and junior primary children. Some of the key strategies to prevent and intervene in bullying is education and collaborative responses. And to do this, we need to consider children's ecological systems. Now, some of the strategies that we can use for our intervention and prevention is to help children to understand their emotions and to self-regulate. We need them to help them to understand what bullying is, what's bullying and what is not bullying. So we need to define those behaviours with them. We need to help them understand the roles of the bystanders and the defenders. So bystanders can inadvertently encourage bullying behaviour through watching or gathering around and not intervening, whereas defenders can divert the attention of the child engaging in the behaviour. They can say stop, they can point out the inequity or unfairness or the impact or the harm of the behaviour. And the more defenders, the more power they have over the child displaying those bullying behaviours, because those children have a need for social acceptance. So if we have several defenders, they're more likely to be successful in their intervention. We need to help children understand the difference between reporting versus dobbing. A lot of children who are experiencing bullying behaviour are fearful of telling anybody in case that in case the behaviour escalates and it becomes worse for them. We need to debunk gender myths. So there are myths that girls can be catty. So relational bullying is normal, developmentally expected. It's not. And boys are more physical. So more physical bullying is expected from boys. But we still need to understand the differences between general fighting and bullying behaviour. We need to teach children empathy from a very early age. So understanding how to empathise with others and respect and value their feelings. We need to help children engaging in that behaviour to how to manage conflict so that they can manage conflict. We know that conflict is a normal part of developmental social development. So teaching them how to manage conflict so that it doesn't escalate into those bullying behaviours. We need to help build resilience. We need to help them to understand the role of friendship, what it's like to be a friend and what good friends look like. And importantly, we need to teach them how to seek help. Now, in the research that I've done with one of my colleagues, Barbara Spears, we found that by teaching junior primary children and educators, that we found a significant increase in their ability to identify an intent to harm, an imbalance of power and repetition. So this was just a short education strategy that we used, and it worked, you know, really well for very young children, so it can work for older children as well. We need to collaborate with and educate children and others in children's ecological systems around all of these things. Now, this is an activity that was developed by teachers to help children understand the key elements of bullying. So children made these cards to identify what repetition looks like, what power differentials look like, and what the intent to harm looks like. And teachers made a bullying checklist so that children knew if they were being if they were experiencing bullying or if they were displaying bullying behaviours. Another activity or resources that were made by children. So this was an activity designed to educate parents. So with the support of teachers, children identified what bullying is and what bullying is not, the three elements of bullying and what we can do to help. Some of the other educational activities that were done in that research with screwing up a piece of paper so that we can see the impact. So if you screw up a piece of paper and you try and straighten it out again, you can see that that paper is not going to be straight again. So it really highlights to children some of the impacts that bullying can have. Another activity we did was dropping an apple. So over several days, just dropping an apple over and over again, and then on about the fourth or fifth day, cutting that apple open and seeing all the bruising that lays underneath that skin. So we can see that even if we don't understand or see that these behaviours may be impacting others, it is impacting others and they're not always visible. So that's all I have to say for today. So thank you for listening, and I'll hand over to Julie. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. I think you've really highlighted what a significant issue bullying is for Australian children. And I really liked those examples at the end of the work that you shared that kids had done, as well as supporting, I suppose, parents' understanding of bullying as well. So thank you. I'll now hand over to Julie. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks very much. Thank you, everyone. So I'm going to focus on how might children and adults view and define bullying differently. So I guess it depends on, from a child's perspective, the different meanings. So some things which adults view as minor, children can view as major, and we have to think about, you know, with a child-focused and a child lens. Some children believe that those that they think are their friends aren't necessarily going to bully, but their parents definitely know that their children have been bullied. Sometimes it comes down to the language that we use with our children around conflict and bullying, and making sure that we define definitely what bullying is and have our children understand the same language. It's difficult to distinguish if the power imbalance in a bullying situation when you talk about parents and children if we're not on the same page. So why is it important for practitioners to understand children's perspectives on bullying? So when a child's perspective is heard, as we know, in matters regarding bullying, and personal centred support can be designed that specifically addresses what they want and what they need, rather than what we may interpret. We can then support them with that. This way the children or the child will be able to communicate openly and freely and feel heard and supported in a safe space, and you're building that trust and relationships, which is really important. How can practitioners best do this? So the first key point here is building that rapport and building relationships. Relationships are key to everything. So for a child to be able to openly communicate, the teacher or practitioner needs to be intentional about building a meaningful engagement and a relationship with them, so that they are assured of being in a safe space and building that trust again. Creating that safe environment, practitioners should create that by not blaming or self-blaming a child, in which the children engaging in bullying are not shamed for their behaviour as well. So having that acceptance and empathy on for both sides both for a perpetrator and a target. So we also must listen without judgment, which is imperative. So children feel understood and supported when their teacher or the adult takes the time to listen and understand what they're saying without forming or including their own biases and bringing their own values to the table, or perhaps, you know, having a previous incident in their own lives around bullying, bringing that to the table and almost switching off because you felt that you know what that felt like. It's really important to kind of leave that at the gate as you enter, so that the kids feel 100% like you're there for them and that you're not going to get emotionally attached to whatever they're going to say. We must explore the underlying issues. So some studies have found that strong associations between victimisation and mental health problems, including depression and anxiety and poor general health, suicidal ideation and behaviour. The child's family can provide perspective on how best to help them. From my experience, family tend to know better about how their kids will respond to different situations. A meeting with them could provide insight into how a child will react to a situation at home, or how to help them and come up with solutions that will be both helpful at school and at home. Offer strategies and tools and skills. Practitioners need to be on the lookout for children's wellbeing, support and mentor them and teach them valuable skills that will help them to be assertive and stand up for each other. A lot of that comes with kindness and empathy, my theory is you can never be too kind. So it's really important for the kids to experience that and role play if you need to. Further support is reassuring the child that they did the right thing by talking and bringing up issues, explaining to them that they're not to blame. It's really important not to blame a child. And sometimes we have parents, some say to the children, oh, you know, Johnny deserved it. Not necessarily. So, if we understand how everybody's feeling, assure the child that their feelings are validated and make sure they walk away feeling heard and that they're not dealing with the situation alone and that they've got you in their corner. Asking questions is very vital as well. So the only way a practitioner can gain information from a child is by asking relevant questions in a way that will make them feel comfortable enough to share their experiences. So I use a strategy of what, how, and gain their trust and get children to be able to trust that you acknowledge and you'll act on the information shared and not dismiss their concerns and act like it didn't happen. There's also really important that we do ongoing check-ins with the children, particularly in a school environment. It's important that we get their feedback and find out about, you know, how the child is now engaging, if there is bullying behaviour and how they understand the child experiencing the behaviour feels and the consequences of the bullying. So most schools have an anti-bullying policy. Very few have an action plan on how they will manage that. So it's really important from a teacher's perspective, if you have the potential to be able to have influence in that space, it's definitely valid to make sure we have an action plan on how to manage bullying. The practitioner may also do some constant follow-up and with the child to ensure that they're responding to their interventions and their methods and that sort of thing as well. So why is it important that practitioners are mindful of their own attitudes to bullying? And I mentioned that just a little bit before. So a practitioner's attitude towards bullying will determine how they view the actual incident that's happened. So whether they consider it to be problematic or their ability to support a target of the bullying is really important. So if we come in with our own values and previous incidents and we deal with it how perhaps somebody told us to deal with it rather than what the new practice is on managing bullying, we can come in with a clouded head. So it's important that we remain objective and put aside those perceptions and preferences to avoid projecting the same onto the children that we work with. How can practitioners be mindful of their own attitudes and how these may impact their practice? So practitioners can practice some self-reflection in order to recognise their attitudes and possible biases towards bullying. And I would also extend that out to self-care as well. It's really important that if you have had a history of being bullied, that you actually practice some self-care and come up with some ideas on how you're going to manage that in a situation where, because in schools, bullying happens every day. So the aim would be to be non-judgmental and to develop a trust within themselves and their feelings, to realise that when their personal differences and history around the subject of bullying are affecting the execution of their role as practitioners. how could labelling children as a bully or a victim impact on the mental health? And we're trying to move away from that. That language, the term bully can be described as a behaviour that can't be changed. And while the term victim is a label on an individual that is disempowering and it may leave the person feeling really helpless, a label that sticks can lead parents and teachers and peers to treat a child differently. And it might be that label can stay with them all the way through their schooling time. So, which may affect, of course, the psyche of the child in their own personal world as well as in their school life. So the child may internalise the label as part of an identity and in turn increase their likelihood of behaving in a manner that identifies with the label in the future, making a change more difficult. The social stigma associated with the labels of bully and victim give more negative impacts of psychosocial functioning and children than those who have not been labelled, especially for those who perceive themselves as a victim. I've had some children in the past say, "I'm a bully and that's all I'll ever be." So they've latched onto that label and "I don't need friends because I'm a bully." So it's important that we try and move away from that language. How might practitioners support a movement away from these labels to support a child's mental health? So practitioners may adopt a strength-based approach that focuses on the child's unique qualities and teaches the child to acknowledge and adopt these qualities in an effort to further develop them. And if we change the narrative around the child, we'll encourage change within them. And cognitive restructuring may also help, that we may remind them that experiencing bully is not their fault and it's not about them, but it's about the other person who, you know, may have some stuff going on in their own world and not doing so well with their own mental health. Thank you. That was quick. Thank you very much for listening. And I move on to our next presenter. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Julie. Thanks. I think you raised some important practice considerations. I really liked that change the narrative to encourage change in them. It's really important. I think our language is very powerful. So now hand over to Vanya. Thank you, Vanya.
Thank you, Nicole. excuse me. So I'm speaking as a parent of children who have experienced bullying. So from that, I've noticed some of these impacts on their mental health over time, troubles with sleep. I've got loss or increase in appetite, troubles with self-regulation, increased meltdowns, poor physical health because of the constant fight, flight, freeze, so an overabundance of adrenaline, which is affecting them physically. There's school avoidance due to fear that they may get bullied again, low self-esteem and confidence, feelings of rejection, isolation and powerlessness. They feel hopeless, they can't change anything. They've got a lack of trust in people. They may be withdrawn, poor performance and concentration, unfortunately self-harming behaviours, acting out with aggression and the showing of antisocial behaviours. And when I think of the mental health impacts, I like to think of it in this biopsychosocial model, where it's not just the physical, not just the psychological, it's all combined into one, and the effects it has can be devastating short-term and long-term. So early intervention and prevention, I've said here that teachers have so many children to support, but we can't rely on them, on teachers alone. So not just for in the school, but practitioners outside as well. Encourage the parents and families to, you know, build rapport with the school staff and the wellbeing team. I found that incredibly helpful to build up that relationship with the school support, and through them we came up with a plan and it was really, really helpful. Speak to the school if they have any concerns that the child may be experiencing or engaging in bullying behaviours. Understand the ever-evolving forms of bullying. As we know, cyberbullying now is, Leslie said it's the second highest form of bullying, so we need to have a real understanding of what that involves. Be aware of the changes in that child's demeanour, no matter how small, if they become withdrawn or they're acting out more. talk to the children about what bullying is and how to speak up and respond. This way you can promote resilience in their children and explain how to do that. And I think really important, the next two points as well, seize the moment, be completely present, listen to what the child is saying, because it may have been really hard for them to step up and voice their concerns. So just be open, honest, understanding, and thankful that when they come to you for help, you know, you're there to help them. And also allow access to safe online and in-person support services, because there is so many out there, so tap into those. Number one, support the parents and caregivers to trust their instincts. The parent, I always say, is the expert on their child. So really build that rapport, get to know them, and you can then, you know, they spend 24/7 a day with their children, so they know they're the experts. Okay, so this next slide might be a bit raw, and these comments were unfortunately but kindly provided by my two children. So I've said, from the mouths of babes, bullies do mean things to me. They say yucky things about me. Bullies hurt my feelings. My body hurt where they hit me. Every day I'm scared that they are going to do something bad to me. Why won't they leave me alone? I don't want to use social media because I know they can get to me. They keep hurting me, not just physically, but emotionally too. What did I do to make them hate me so much? I thought I could trust my friends. Sad but true, and that's why we're here today, to advocate and try and educate. Okay, another aspect that's close to my home is children with medical conditions and different abilities, so advocating against bullying as a parent. So as a parent, I've found that educating myself about bullying has been vital. When I was at school, obviously it's far different to what it is now, but some of those characteristics obviously still are present. It's been important for me to educate myself so I can educate others. This was gathering information on my daughter's medical condition and also my son's autism spectrum. Gather age-appropriate information and resources to share. So I've gone to the school leaders, I've gone to the teachers, and I've provided them with resources that they can use and share with the class, so they, not only the class but the teachers, get a better understanding of what's going on. There's rare conditions do exist and they need to be acknowledged. So even if they don't look different, we need to know that there are hidden conditions and they need to be recognised, supported, and also spoken about. Understand that every condition presents differently in each individual. Sounds easy, but it's so true. It's so easy to put someone in a box and just say, right, you're on the spectrum, this is how you are. It's not that no child is the same. And through all this, being a carer with children with medical needs and different abilities, it's not easy. So we'd love practitioners to find alternative ways to interact with children if they're unable to communicate what they're going through. Maybe they're non-verbal, or they're too shy, or they just don't know how to explain or don't feel safe. Please be ready to speak up and ask questions. A very important one too was actively engage with the specialists of the child, because they do spend that time. They're the ones providing, say, occupational therapy. Work together on how you can support that child. Also, reach out to little known associations and not-for-profit organisations, because like myself, we have lived experience and an understanding of the challenges the families may be facing. So definitely seeking support to assist my children has made the world of difference. And that's the one thing I would take away. Please support the parents. They know their child the best. And educate and advocate.
Oh, thank you, Vanya. It was great to hear your experience, and I think a privilege to hear from your children. So thank you for sharing those quotes with us. really knowing what was helpful for you as a parent is an important piece of the puzzle. So thank you very much. And thank you to all three of you. Thanks, Vanya. Thanks to all three of you for your presentations. So that leads us into our question and answer time. If Leslie and Julie would like to join us again. So I thought I might start with you, Julie. One of the questions that came through, which I thought was interesting and might provide some context, is what makes a child or a young person more likely to engage in bullying behaviours?
Good question. So I guess it could be many, many different things, and Leslie touched on a few earlier on, but I guess from my perspective, what I've seen is, the multiple factors that can contribute is a feeling insecure, picking on someone who seems emotionally or physically weaker can provide a feeling of importance or popularity and or control. A lack of awareness, so some students or children don't even know or realise that it's unacceptable to pick on other children who are different because of their size, their looks, their race, or their disability, or their religion, and particularly those that frequently see this behaviour from other people in their lives. If it's mirrored, monkey see, monkey do kind of thing as well. So, which goes on to behavioural role models as well. So being exposed to aggressive and unkind interactions with family members and other areas of their life can result in students treating other people the same way. Behavioural problems, which can be part of an ongoing pattern or aggressive behaviour, which can stem from ADHD or situations like that where children are having to deal with those internalised things that are happening within their own worlds as well. And I think the last one for me is about problems at home and, when there's divorce and separation and things happening in a child's world, the wheels can fall off. And so I think it's important to understand, the certain situations where a child needs power back. And so that imbalance of power needs to happen. And I know Leslie touched on that earlier about the imbalance of power. And I think it's understanding that that's where a child is in their world. And just because they are a bully doesn't mean that they are necessarily unfixable and that we can support them in changing things. It doesn't mean they're like that forever. So that's a good question. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. I think, exploring that context is really important, isn't it, for practice? It kind of gives some clues as to why something might be happening for a child. Mm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Something else that's come through a bit, which I thought was interesting as well. Leslie, I'll ask you this one. I'm wondering how bullying in young children is different from bullying in older children, whether there's different behaviours or things to look out for and what that might mean for practice as well and working with kids of different ages.
So bullying for it's contested in the field at the moment in relation to whether young children can be classified as engaging in bullying behaviour, because we know that young children, particularly children under 5, are still learning social competence, their social skills. They might use aggressive behaviours to achieve a goal but not intend to harm. So, for example, if there are two children in a sandpit and one child wants a spade, they might hit the other child over the head, and they might do that on a daily basis because they want that spade and that child seems to always have it. So that is by definition bullying behaviour, but it's about educating that child to around social competence, around how to ask for that spade rather than just trying to engage in aggressive behaviours to try and reach their goal. For young children, the bullying behaviour is more likely to be physical behaviour. And relational bullying comes in fairly early in the age range, and that continues on. I guess as they get older, the physical bullying tends to decline. The relational, social, and cyberbullying tends to increase as children have more access to internet technologies and mobile phones. They're more vulnerable to the cyberbullying behaviour. Again, we have a look at the developmental levels of older children. So the young people that are going through puberty, they're learning about their identity, they're experimenting, they might engage in those behaviours, and it's more likely to go online and offline. So if there's a student that's being bullied at school, that's likely to go to, you know, outside of school through the online platform. And as far as responding to that behaviour, I think we need to educate from a really early age around what bullying means, what it is, and the impact that it can have. How to, you know, what is, how to build empathy for others, how to consider others' feelings. And like I said in my, I guess, my PowerPoint, in relation to educating kids around social competence and the impacts that their behaviour can have on others, really needs to be implemented at a very early age. And as far as responding to bullying, you know, educating kids around self-regulation, around managing conflict, around help-seeking behaviours as well, is really important from a very early age, but also to normalise that as they get older, because we know that as adolescents tend to seek help from their peers before they seek help from professionals. So if we educate our kids around bystander behaviours versus defender behaviours, you know, maybe their peers can play a role in supporting them to seek help or seeking help on their behalf.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Leslie. And Vanya, kind of related to that, one of the questions we got through was, what can I do if a child is being bullied and they don't want to talk about it? I thought that was quite interesting because that happens a lot.
It does. It, I must admit, it happened with my two. It took them probably a year, which is awful, but it took them a year to build up the courage to actually tell me, and whether that's because they didn't know how. But I think for saying that, if you do see someone enacting bullying behaviour, or if they are experiencing it, do step in and just see how you can get out of them what it is. And that may be, you know, do a social story on what to do if you are experiencing it. If the same with if they are enacting bullying behaviours, educate them, train them, teach them, provide like support, you know, for those being experiencing bullying, just enforce gently the fact that they have the right to feel safe, and to do so they can come to a safe person or safe people, a safe place. And I think one saying that I heard for those engaging in bullying behaviours was, help those that least deserve it, because they're the ones that need it the most. And that just struck a chord with me, because it, there's clearly something going on behind the scenes. As Leslie and Julie said, you know, it's not just that children, that child is unkind or catty or whatever. It has had to come from somewhere, modelling from parents, you know, monkey see, monkey do. So, yeah, definitely take the time to build rapport and trust with the child so that they can open up and tell you what exactly is going on.
May I add to that, Nicole, please?
Yeah, of course.
As I said earlier, the research shows that children and students are not actually reporting bullying in the way that they should be, and they're not seeking help from professionals. Mm. And I think a big key in that is relative to the fear of the bullying escalating. So I think it's... And there's other research out there that talks about students that have reported bullying and it hasn't been managed very well within a school context. So that then acts as a role model, as a measure for how bullying is going to be responded to and whether the responses are actually working. So it's really important as professionals and as parents that if a child does report bullying behaviour to us, that we respond in a way that's going to be really supportive to them and not leave them more vulnerable to that bullying behaviour escalating and them feeling even more unsafe than what they did before they reported.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so building that trust and that rapport, but then also once that disclosure happens, making sure that that's being taken seriously. Yeah, great. We did get a lot of questions about the idea of labelling. So I wanted to touch on that a bit because I thought that was a really, really important point. So what can we name it instead? We've sort of been using the terms experiencing bullying behaviour or engaging in bullying behaviour. But someone else was really interested in if we're not labelling, what are we talking about? So is it important then to label behaviours? Sort of just thought I'd open it up to the panel to discuss that.
I think we need to label the behaviour, not the child. Mm-hmm. So we need to say that if the behaviour is bullying, we need to recognise that, acknowledge that and talk about that behaviour is bullying. But it's about labelling that behaviour, not the child. So we don't label the child a bully. We label the behaviour. That's why we sort of use the terms, well, use the language, a child displaying bullying behaviour or engaging in bullying behaviour. But otherwise, as Julie said, they adopt those labels and they live up to those labels. They just assume, I'm seen as a bully. I might as well just continue on engaging in those behaviours because that's how I'm being treated and that's how I'm seen.
I find the term victim very disempowering. It takes away your sense of worth and you just keep perpetrating, oh, I'm a victim. So I definitely think that one can stay with that child for a very long time. I think it would be wonderful to get rid of the term victim because it's just so disempowering for the person.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So really stepping away from labelling the child, but labelling the behaviour as bullying and recognising it as bullying.
In my space, we kind of look at it as more the above the line and below the line behaviours rather than, you know, what was okay, what's not okay, and then looking at, you know, what can we do about that rather than it be, you know, you're a bully and you're a victim. It's what are the behaviours that aren't okay and what does that look like? What does that feel like? And then come up with solutions of how do we manage that with that child? So we try not to label, you know, it's hard when, you know, for so many years we've been calling them victims and bullies to, you know, to change that. And so, you know, it's a process, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah, like that below the line, above the line, below the line behaviour and really defining what that is. Great. Someone did ask a specific question for Julie as well, which I wanted to ask whilst we were still live. Someone wanted to know about whether you could expand on the what, who, where technique. Have I got that right?
yeah, what, how. So it was what, how. So it's a real simple engagement tool in working with kids. And, you know, when a kid walks into my space or it's normally, you know, hey, what's going on? You know, what's happening for you? And then, you know, they might say, you know, something's happened and then going, okay, well, what did that look like? Or what did that feel like? And, you know, and then exploring how can I help you or how can I work with you to create some solutions for that and you know, what's important for you, because I think what's important from me as an adult's perspective isn't always what a child wants, and so, you know, a child might come in and report an incident that's happened, or whether it's conflict or whether it's bullying behavior, and, you know, they might show, you know, those signs that they're, you know, completely upset, and but it might not necessarily be the words that's been used. It might be the exclusion, or it might be, and so, you know, you can go in tunnel vision of what you think they need, whereas if you go in, you know, being child focused and asking them, you know, what out of those, that whole scenario, what's important, what's the most important thing that you would want to have you know, fixed. Or, you know, little kids, I say, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you want to happen? And, you know, the kids will come back with, you know, I just want them to be kind, or I want them to be nice, or I want them to be friendly to me. I don't want them to leave me out. And so they're almost labelling those behaviours, the above and below the line behaviours, and what they expect a good friend to be. Or you know, programs like Friendology are like that as well, where you place everybody on a platform of, we are all friends, just what level of friend are we? And, you know, we're not always going to be kind to each other all the time, but we can try. So, so what, how, what's happening for you, what's going on, what's important for you, and how can I support you, and how can I make things better, and how can I help you make life a little bit easier for you at school or wherever you're at, sports or whatever. So, yeah, I hope that, does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Julie. And one of the final questions that I might ask you today, might open it up to each of you, is whether there's any child-friendly resources that you've come across around supporting children to understand and be able to identify bullying. Anything that you sort of come across that would be really helpful?
I have a really interesting video that I like, particularly with the older kids, and there's lots of great videos out there around, you know, what you know, demonstrating bullying and the effects of bullying and the emotional attachment that happens and the long-term effects. And Leslie used the paper one before, which is one we use in school as well. But there's another one, a video about McDonald's or a hamburger shop or something, and the guy smashes the hamburger and nobody does anything about it, and yet in the actual, you have actors in the restaurant part, and they're actually playing out a bullying scenario of a kid being picked on, and nobody's doing anything about that, but everyone's returning their smashed hamburger and wanting to complain about it. And it's a really interesting dynamic where they turn and say, well, if you saw a child being bullied and being picked on, how come you did nothing? But the burger that was picked on before you got it, you did nothing about. So, you know, that's a really good way to introduce, you know, how things can then be damaged, because, you know, the burger is broken for a long time now unless you eat it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some really good videos out there. There's, you know, there's lots of different programs that schools utilise. You know, we use Big Talks, Little People, I think it's called, and we use Friendology. There's lots of resources for teachers on Teachers Pay Teachers. There's lots of stuff from America. America do a lot of really good graphics and really good, you know, child-friendly little things as well. So there's lots of programs out there to work with kids around what does bullying look like, what does it feel like, and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, from my perspective, that's the stuff that I use. And also doing role plays. Kids, that's really important, you know, as an adult, mm-hmm. It's okay to have fun, as you said before. And, you know, I'll quite often do a role play with kids around, you know, it's hard for someone who's being really mean to a child to turn around and, you know, mm-hmm. when a child is being kind back. So, you know, there's a great video in America of a presenter doing a scenario where they're being picked on and the child is actually turn around and say, you've got beautiful eyes, or you're a really kind person, and I wish I could be like you. And so changing that imbalance of power to bring it back to a little bit level playing field, I suppose. And just by being kind, you don't have to, you know, change the world, just be kind.
Yeah. Thanks, Julie. Yeah, I was just gonna say, is there anything, Vanya, that you came across as a parent?
Not on bullying per se, so no, I can't help with that.
That's okay.
I would prefer, as like Julie has said, it would be wonderful for the teachers to have those resources as well available. So, you know, stock up on those resources, find as much as you can. So not just to educate the children, but the parents too. Something that they can engage with as well as the child. That would be wonderful to have.
Great, thanks.
I'm going to go back to the old but good experiment, the blue eye, brown eye experiment, where it looks at exclusion of children based on the colour of their eyes. That's an excellent opportunity to talk about power differentials and bullying. But also I've created a resource with teachers, early childhood teachers in South Australia that is available that I've passed on to you, Nicole.
That's available in the handouts section.
Yeah, for junior primary teachers in particular, but it can be used, I guess, for kids with special needs, but also it can be adapted to use with older children as well, that looks at all of those areas that I identified when I was talking about how to educate kids around, what bullying is, what bullying is not, building resilience, managing conflict, all those types of things. And when I highly recommend, because of the lack of understanding with parents as well, is whatever resources that you use and create with children and students, try to get them to share that with their parents, so that we build on community understanding about what bullying is, because we have days specific towards, you know, Harmony Day, and we do talk about bullying a lot, but we don't really drill down into what it in fact is. So I think we largely have an uneducated community, so we need to go beyond kids and broader.
We've got a lot of questions around helpful approaches or evidence-based approaches to addressing bullying. So I thought I'd just open it up to you guys to have a bit of a discussion around things that you know are helpful.
It's difficult to point out a particular program because there's so many to choose from, and there are limited evaluations of some of these programs, but it doesn't mean that they're not research informed, and it doesn't mean that they can't be effective. So it's important that you actually have a look for programs that might be suitable to your context to make it relevant and effective within your setting. So it is difficult, but there are lots of resources out there.
I found as a parent, using my son's occupational therapist, she's been working a lot on, you know, what emotions look like, what emotions are depicted in faces, how to recognise sarcasm. I think that's a very important tool to work with their therapist, as I said in my slides, and teach those children, because it's part of their therapy anyway. Just that's a great way for them to start building an idea of, hang on, they're taking the mickey out of me, rather than, you know, just taking it blindly and thinking it's okay. So I think work with the OTs or the whichever therapists.
Yeah, great, thanks Vanya.
I would say from my perspective, in a school environment, restorative practice is really important for schools to train their staff around how to manage conflict and, you know, be good at it. So that would be my feedback.
Yeah, and I think you need the consistency, Julie, as well. Like whatever program you are implementing, you need to make sure that your staff are trained in that, and that it gets implemented in the same way, so that it's effective.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And a few people asked about building resilience in children. So we do hear that a lot, building resilience. They wanted some specific guidance on how you can build resilience in children, I suppose particularly around bullying experiences. Might throw that
to you, Julie. Yeah, sorry, I've got a tickle in my throat. I'm going to say that, like, what I use particularly is using those strength-based models and working with kids around, you know, the circle of control and how they can actually, you know, the things they can control and the things they can't control, and getting kids to understand that the — my voice is going to go. I might just pause for a second if that's okay.
Sure.
I might jump in while Julie's paused. I think building resilience comes from a strengths-based perspective where you help children identify their strengths. Also building their social networks. So if they've got some peer support, parental support, family support, school support, that helps them with their resilience.
Sorry guys, still getting on from my tonsillitis. So I think, you know, when I definitely work with the kids, it's around getting them to understand the things, you know, people will always be mean and people always say nasty things and we can't control that, and getting them to, you know, to reflect on, you know, what are adult problems and what are kid problems, and how can they differentiate between the two, and then work with them on, you know, you don't necessarily have to have the right words to come back at somebody who's being mean to you, but you know, if you can understand in your own mind that, you know, and I think, you know, for as long as I was a police officer and things like that, that was the trick, is getting people to know that you can't change other people, but the way you respond to that is that, you know, respond versus react situation. And if you respond in a respectful manner and in a kind manner, kindness breeds kindness, as we know, and kindness creates all sorts of, you know, wonderful things for our health and well-being. And if we can actually focus on the kindness and teaching our kids to be kind and be a better person than they were yesterday, then I think that's the key to moving forward. And you know, we're all different. We all come from diverse and very different backgrounds. And if we're respectful of that and we're kind, then, you know, it's hard to be mean to someone who's kind to you, because that makes you out to be almost like a monster, and nobody wants to be made a monster. So I think, you know, for me in our school, that's what I focus on is that circle of control and getting kids to understand, you know, for me, that's where the magic is, when it comes from inside. And there's no magic wand that's going to make bullying go away. It's just about, you know, changing the way we process things and what can we do better today than what we did yesterday. So I hope that helps. There's no one solution doesn't fit all. You know, but kindness does. Kindness makes a big difference to everyone's lives. Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think also reiterating to the child that it's not them. There's nothing wrong with them. They haven't done anything wrong. I know Vanya was saying when she was talking about her children, how they said, you know, what have we done wrong? Helping them to understand it's not them. It's not something they've done wrong. It's not their problem why this is occurring or happening. To them, that, you know, there's helping them to, I guess, understand that there might be other issues happening in the child's life who is exhibiting those behaviours towards them. Did you want to add anything to that, Vanya? How do you?
I might ask Vanya, sort of maybe how you responded to the sorts of things that your kids were saying and how you did build them up.
I think once they finally opened up, I just was open and honest and really listened to what they were trying to say. So through doing that and having that loving connection, them knowing that they could come to me about anything, that I feel helped them build the resilience to then go in the school situation and realise, actually, it's not me that's wrong. It's what they're doing to me is wrong. I haven't done it. So through that open communication with me and also the school wellbeing leader and the OT, it was definitely a combined effort to reinforce that it's not them and it does need to change, and this is how it's going to change. So I found that really helpful.
Yeah, so building that support team.
Yes.
Around the child. Yeah.
Create the village.
Create the village. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you all. It's been a pleasure having a chat with you. So thank you very much for joining us. And thank you to our audience again for watching. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.